Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim is Ayin Gimel. We are on Ayin Beis Amud Beis. We're at the very bottom of the Amud. We are dealing with a fundamental question of the Gemara, taking us back to the Mishnah. First Mishnah of the eighth parak of Zvachim starts back on Ayin Amud Beis. And the Mishnah over there, succinctly stated, says that when I have an animal, it gets mixed up with other animals, so there's no bittul. There's not going to be any nullification. The Mishnah over there gives a number of scenarios in which I have animals getting mixed up together. And even if one animal that's an animal of Isser gets mixed up with 100, 1,000, 10,000 animals that are all mutter, so the Mishnah said that there's no bittul. Under certain circumstances, there is a way to remedy the situation. You go back to the Mishnah, you review all the cases of the Mishnah, and you will see very clearly that there are scenarios where it can be remedied, but remedied with the understanding that there is not going to be bittul, there will never be bittul, but there is a way to remedy the situation. But there is no bittul in the Mishnah. And with that stated, the Gemara yesterday on Ayin Beis asks a really simple and straightforward question, and that is, why is there no bittul? If you look at Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, very short daf, the Gemara over there asks succinctly in two words, v'niftalu baruba. So why don't we have the concept of bittul barov? Meaning that when I have a mixture of animals and the majority of the animals are mutter and the minority of them are usser, so we should have a concept of bittul, and that means that the majority should nullify the minority. That's the Gemara's question. And so what the Gemara does not discuss and does not entertain is the idea that maybe the animals themselves fall under the category of birya. We know by birya there's no bittul. The Gemara does not entertain that discussion. I mentioned yesterday, if you look at Tosfos on the top of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, so he does propose a couple of suggestions why the Gemara doesn't bring in the concept of birya. So take a look at Tosfos over there. And so right now we're in the Gemara's first attempted answer. And the first attempted answer of the Gemara is that the reason why there's no bittul is a function of the fact that the animals are generally sold by count. It's what's called in halacha a davar shebeminyan, something which is generally sold by count. And when you have items that are generally sold by count, so then they are chashuv, they are significant, and therefore they're going to be blocked by bittul. This is again the term that I used yesterday. I used today is bittul blockage. In other words, that the chachamim under certain circumstances have blocked bittul for various reasons. One is because it's a davar shebeminyan, and seemingly davar shebeminyan is a function of it's a davar chashuv. It's something which is significant, which blocks the bittul. Now the Gemara says, now this answer is a good answer, but only if you learn the Mishnah Arla, and you learn the Mishnah Arla the way Reish Lakish learns the Mishnah Arla. Now the way Reish Lakish learns the Mishnah Arla is the following. The Mishnah Arla talks about the sale of various items, and the Mishnah over there basically says that when items are sold by count, so those items are significant and therefore not going to be subject to bittul. Now, if you look carefully at the language of the Mishnah over there, writes, Kol shadarka limanos, that anything that is sold by count, mikadesh, so it is going to sanctify. Sanctify over there in the context of that Mishnah Arla is talking about things that are subject to Kalaya Kerem and Arla and therefore are going to be burned. Right? Mikadesh over there does not mean sanctified, meaning positive. Mikadesh over there means it has to be destroyed and burnt. Right, the Mishnah over there is using the language of the Pasuk. But anyway, it's not subject to bittul. Let's say it like that. Let's say it nice and succinctly. And the reason why is because it's sold by count. Now, the truth of the matter is, as we went over in yesterday's daf, that Mishnah Arla has two nuschas. It has two versions of it. One according to Reish Lakish and the other one's according to Rav Yochanan. According to Rav Yochanan, the way to learn the Mishnah is Esh Shedarko Limanos. According to Reish Lakish, it's kol shadarka limanos. What's the difference between them? Subtle difference, but an important difference between the two versions of that Mishnah. According to the Rav Yochanan version of es shadarka limanos, there were examples given in the Mishnah. And in other words, in order for something to be considered a davar shebeminyan, it has to be exclusively sold by count. Meaning that if something is generally sold by count, that's not good enough. In other words, for something to be impervious to bittul, it has to be something which is exclusively sold by count. The examples that were given yesterday in the Mishnah, it goes, Eprach, Rimon, Bedan, etc., etc. So those are items that are exclusively sold by count. Animals, as Rashi said in yesterday's daf, animals are not exclusively sold by count. Sometimes, this was a minute back then, could be still today, I just happen to be not in the business of selling livestock. So but back then, the minhag is that when animals were sold, they were sold generally by count, but sometimes instead of selling animals by the number, I simply have a herd of animals. It occupies a field. How much for that herd of animals? Okay, so sometimes it was not sold by count. So according to Rav Yochanan, that's not good. Meaning, bittul only is going to be when something is exclusively sold by count. Now, according to Reish Lakish of the opinion that no, that's not the Girus of the Mishnah. The Girus of the Mishnah is kol shadarko limanos. As long as it's generally sold by count, so it's going to be impervious to bittul. So for Reish Lakish, animals are also going to be blocked by bittul. Because even though animals are not always sold by count, but generally they're sold by count, and therefore they fall under this category, under this Mishnah. Good. That is, so basically what we arrived at yesterday, and this was the point that we got to yesterday, and we're going to continue with today, is, so according to Reish Lakish, works out very good. Meaning, question, how come there's no bittul in our Mishnah? Animals got mixed up together, and the Mishnah says it's not going to be bittul. And then we're going to have to seek other solutions in terms of how to deal with the situation. So why isn't there bittul? So according to Reish Lakish, the answer is, because it's a davar shebeminyan. It's true that animals are not always sold by count, but generally they're sold by count. And so from Reish Lakish's standpoint, that's enough to make it a davar shebeminyan. Therefore, it's a davar chashuv. Therefore, it's not subject to bittul. That is the opinion of Reish Lakish. Masha Enkein, according to Rav Yochanan, that's not good. Because according to Rav Yochanan, the only thing that's not subject to bittul is something which is es shedarko limnos, which means that it always has to be sold by count. Only those things that are exclusively sold by count, those things are impervious to bittul. Things that are generally sold by count are, in fact, subject to bittul, and so therefore, how do you learn the Mishnah according to Rav Yochanan? That is exactly the point where we left yesterday. We pick it up today, and today what we're going to be learning are two additional answers to this question, Rav Papa and Rav Ashi. So the Amoraim are dealing with the basic question of, why is there no bittul in our Mishnah? So we do have one approach, but the approach is a limited approach because it only works according to Reish Lakish, and it doesn't work according to Rav Yochanan. So now Rav Papa gives us our new approach of the day. So we start today on Ayin Beis Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. I'm Rav Papa. Haitana Tana Delitra Kitziosu. So the author of our Mishnah is the same author of the following Braisa that teaches us the halacha of Litra Kitzios, the Amar. Called Avar Sheyesh Bo Minyan, Afilu B'Derabanan, anything which is sold by count, generally, not exclusively, anything which is sold by count generally, even if it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, not going to be subject to bittul. And for sure, if it's an Isser D'Araisa, it's not going to be subject to bittul. So basically, what Rav Papa is arguing is basically what we said earlier. It's a Davar Shebeminyan. It just happens to be that we do have a Braisa that clear. Now, when I say the word clearly, by the way, I am... I'm submitting that to, it's not super clear, but I'll say it right now, I'll say clearly. We're going to see a Bryce, we're going to learn a Bryce together right now, that clearly is of the opinion that as long as something is generally sold by count, it is going to be in fact subject to bittul blockage. It will not be subject to bittul. And even if it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, and for sure if it's an Issa D'Araisa, it happens to be our Mishnah is talking about an Issa D'Araisa. Our Mishnah is talking about Achata Samesa. Our Mishnah is talking about Ashur HaNiskal. Clearly, our Mishnah is talking about Issuri D'Araisa. But even if it were just Issuri D'Rabbanan, still, something sold by count is not going to be subject to Bittul. And now let's learn this Braisa together. Ditanya. So here we have a Braisa. Now, first and foremost, a couple of things that I just want to remind us. Before we start learning the Braisa together. The Braisa is going to be talking about the pressing of fig cakes. In other words, the way they used to make their figs is they used to take their figs, they dry them out, and then they would put the figs into a mold, and the mold was circular in nature, and basically it looked like a cake at the end. So in other words, a fig cake. We're talking about where by accident a little bit of truma was mixed in. So remember what we learned earlier, when it comes to truma, so bittul will occur by truma, but only at a ratio of 1 to 100. That's the ratio of bittul that I need, truma versus non-truma. One part truma to 100 parts non-truma, then and only then we have bittul. Okay? Truma on figs, is that a requirement min haTorah midRabbanan? Rashi Tosos, both on the daf say, it's only a requirement midRabbanan. Rashi and Tosos are both of the opinion that the only fruits, the only produce that are subject to truma min haTorah is only grapes, olives, and the five grains. That's it. Those are the only things that are subject to Truma Min HaTorah, which, by the way, fits in very well with our Gemara, because our Gemara says, even if it's Midrabanan, what's Midrabanan? meaning according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, it's wonderful. Meaning figs min haTorah do not require truma to be taken off. Only rabbinically does it require to have truma taken off, but still rabbinically there's a requirement. Now it happens to be the Rambam's opinion. We've gone over this many times, but it's just the review is fantastic. The Rambam's of the opinion that all fruit are subject to trumas and maestros min haTorah. And so therefore, according to the Rambam, figs have a requirement to take off truma min haTorah, not midrabbanan. Okay, how do you learn the
all fruits of Israel?
So then according to the Rambam, how do you learn the Gemara over here? So it could be that the Gemara over here is describing post Churban Beis Hamikdash, where maybe the requirement is not daraisa. Perhaps that's how the Rambam would learn our Gemara over here. Notwithstanding, okay, so we're talking about a little truma getting mixed in with chulin. We're talking about figs. Figs are according to Rashi and Tosfos do not have a requirement of truma min haTorah, only mid the Rabbanan. That's the topic under discussion. When we say litra, by the way, litra is a weight. It's a weight measurement. So let's learn the braisa together. We're 9 gimel amud aleph. We're 2 lines down. To Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. Litra kitzios. So let's say I have a litra, a weight, a certain amount of cut figs. Shadarsa al pia eagle. And what I did is I put it into the mold, but I put it on the lip of the mold. So in other words, these are sticky figs that you basically, if you slide them right against the lip of the mold, they stay on the lip of the mold. So in other words, there are more figs on the bottom of the mold, but right now I kind of just scrape them right along the side, so they're right on the lip. Ve'enu yodea be'ezo igol darsa. And now there happens to be that how many molds are around right now? A lot. I'm not going to give a number yet. We'll get to numbers in just a moment, but there are a lot of molds around. And I took a little bit of the truma, I took a litra of the truma, and I scraped it right on the lip of one of the molds, and I got a whole bunch of molds around, and it happens to be that there are other molds over there with also some of the figs scraped on the lid of the molds. So now, Alpi chavis v'ena yodei beza, chavis darsa, alpi kaveres v'ena yodei beza, kaveres darsa. And then the braisa goes on just to describe that the same thing would be true if there are barrels, and the same thing would be true if the instrument, if the container looks something like a beehive. Okay, the braisa just basically giving other examples. So, now what do we say in terms of bittul? The first question, I guess, is there bittul altogether? And if there is bittul, what can be put into the consideration when it comes to bittul? Now, over here, just going to be a little bit complicated because we're going to have a machlokas tanaim about a machlokas tanaim. In other words, the earlier tanaim are Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yoshua. They are earlier generation tanaim. And the later tanaim are Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda are going to be arguing about what Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yoshua's machlokas is. Okay, so it's a machlokas within a machlokas. So Rebbe Meir is going to take the following position. Rebbe Elazar takes the following position, according to Rebbe Meir. Ronas alyonos kilo hein prudos, vachtachtonos malos es alyonos. So, as far as the way we're going to look at that one litra of figs that are scraped on the lid of the on the edge of the mold, we're basically going to look at it independent in terms of what can be counted against it for bittul. All the figs, even the figs on the bottom of the mold, can be used to count against it. Now that is really a chiddush if you think about it, because they are independent of one another. In other words, clearly I could see a difference between the figs that are scraped on the side of the mold versus the figs on the bottom of the mold. Rav Elazar is of the opinion that it doesn't matter. All of it can be applied and used for the purposes of bittul. So according to Rav Elazar, step number one is that there is bittul. And step number two, according to Rav Elazar, is that not only is there bittul, but I can even count the figs on the bottom of the mold to be applied against it for bittul. That's Shitas Rav Elazar. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, im yesh me'apum, im yalu v'im lav, apum me'masur, v'ashulayim mutarim. And Rabbi Yoshua takes a position which is just going to be easier for me to explain, because frankly, I understand it better. And Rabbi Yoshua says, look, the litra of figs is scraped on the side of the mold. I have other molds over there with also figs scraped onto the side. If I have 100 other molds in addition to this mold, where I have now figs, non-truma figs scraped on the side, and this one mold with the litra of figs scraped on the side. So now I have 101 molds. One of it's truma, and the other 100 are non-truma. Then and only then do I say bittul. Otherwise, I do not say bittul. Meaning, I cannot look at the figs scraped on the side of the mold and the figs on the bottom of the mold. I cannot look at them together. Because I know that the truma, the litra of truma, is on the side of the mold. So I can't look at the figs on the bottom and simply say, we'll apply that towards bittul. We're not going to apply that towards bittul because I know that is not subject to the suffix. The only thing that's subject to the suffix is the literature of the script on the side. So only under the circumstance, which admittedly is going to be really unlikely, but only under the circumstance where I have 100 other molds there in the same room, where on each one of them I have a litre of figs, of non-truma figs, scraped on the side, and now this one gets mixed in with the other 100, then and only then is there going to be bittul. Im yesh mea pumim yalu v'im lav apumim masurim v'shulayim mutarim. So if there are 100 other molds, then there's going to be bittul, and if not, then there's not going to be bittul. Now, mind you, by the way, according to Rabbi Yoshua, there is a leniency that comes out from this. Because the figs on the bottom of the mold, in any one of the molds, obviously, will be fine. Because he simply will view the literature script on the side and the figs on the bottom of the mold as two separate entities. So they're always going to be fine. The only thing that's not going to be fine is any of the figs scraped on the side of any of the molds, unless I have 101 altogether. Okay, that is all Rav Meir's version of the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Here comes Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I have a different Masorah in terms, I agree there's a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, and I agree that Rabbi Eliezer takes a more lenient position than that of Rabbi Yeshua, but you have it wrong. And this is now Rabbi Yehuda's version. According to Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Im yesham kuf pomim yalu v'im lava pomim asur v'chulei. So basically, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar is Rabbi Yoshua. Or, if I could say it just a little bit clearer, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir's version of Rabbi Yeshua, no, that's Rabbi Elazar. So in other words, Rabbi Elazar takes the position that only when I have 101 molds all together, with each one of them having a litra fig script on the side, and one of them is truma, and the other 100 are non-truma, then and only then do I have bittul. Fine. What's Rabbi Yoshua's position? Now, Rabbi Yoshua is going to be more machmir. What's more machmir than that? Rabbi Yoshua Omer, afilu yesham shlosha meos, pumim, lo yalu. I can have 300 other molds over there, and 300 is just a number of exaggeration. In other words, I can have whatever number of molds over there, and it's simply doesn't matter. Meaning that there's not going to be bittul, there's never going to be bittul. Now, why not? And this is the point we wanted to get to. Meaning this is exactly the point of discussion. The reason why there is no bittul is because it's a davar shebeminyan. Meaning figs are generally sold by count. And since they're not always sold by count, but that's not important. They're generally sold by count. And since figs are generally sold by count, so therefore it's a davar shebeminyan, it's not going to be subject to bittul. And so, according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yoshua. So when I said the Braisa clearly states, that's why I hesitated. Because the Braisa doesn't clearly state it. The Braisa has one opinion according to one opinion. So, but still, it exists. So Rabbi Yoshua, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is of the opinion that because figs are generally counted, so therefore it's a davar shebeminyan, and therefore there's not going to be bittul. Now let's first finish the braisa, and then I'm going to come back and just raise one point that's really worthwhile considering. Darsa beigel ve'enu yodeh be'ezah makom beigel darsa olitzfona ledroma divra kol yalu. Now, if let's say I was Doris beigel, let's say that the fig was not scraped on the side of the mold, but let's say the litra of figs, of truma figs, was now went into the mold and actually got mixed in with the rest of the with the rest of the figs, and you don't know where it is. Beiza makom beigel darso letzvarno ledroma north orientation, south orientation, doesn't matter. According to everybody, there would in fact be bittul. Okay, I can't differ habraisa. Okay, but what we have now in the braisa is at least one opinion who clearly is of the position that when something is sold b'minyan, even if it's not exclusively sold in count, but as long as it's generally sold in count, it's considered a davish b'minyan. It's therefore not going to be subject to bittul. And then to the question that the Gemara asks on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph in yesterday's daf, in terms of why is there no bittul in our Mishnah? So according to Rav Papa, the answer is because our Tana, our Mishnah, is subscribing to the same who's subscribing of this Braisa, but more specifically, Rav Yoshua, according to Rav Yehuda's version. Which is similar to Reish Lakish. Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
So then that becomes the halacha?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Okay. Just in other words, it's just simply a way to explain the Mishnah. Okay. Does it go by ratio? It also, if it's something which is sold by count, because it's so significant, so therefore ratio will never become a factor. In other words, it's just simply not going to be bittul.
What happened to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that?
Okay, good. Good. So now one point of, after we finish the brisa, so one point of worthwhile discussion is as follows. Ben already anticipated the question, and that is that we have seen throughout the Gemara and in Zvachim we've already seen it a number of times that according to Rav Yehuda, min b'mino in batel, which means that according to Rav Yehuda, if I have like items, it just happens to be that one's asr and one's mutter, but if I have like items and they are mixed together, so proportion never becomes a significant, which means to say that there's never going to be bittul if it's min bimino, if they're like items that get mixed together. How do we know that according to Rav Yehuda? So he learned it from the bloods that get mixed together on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, there are two bloods that get mixed together. Also, we discussed that a lot lately in the Gemara and Zvachim. The blood of the goat and the blood of the bull. The assumption, of course, is that the bull produces a lot more blood. And when I mix together the blood of the goat and the blood of the bull, so presumably there is a lot more blood of bull than there is that of goat. And the Torah says that they're both recognized. Rav Yehuda uses that as a model to explain that any time I have a mixture of min b'mino, so therefore it's never going to be subject to bittul. And that's Rav Yehuda's shita throughout Shas. And here in this brisa, Rav Yehuda is quoting a machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua, and we're talking about figs getting mixed together with figs. It happens to be one's mutter, one's asar, but there should never be bittul according to the shita of Rav Yehuda. So that is that's a question. And Tosfos over here, the bottom Tosfos, the lengthy Tosfos on the bottom, which actually goes into the Amud Beis. So Tosfos discusses that question. One of the answers Tosfos gives, I'll just say over one of the answers, really interesting, is that in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. If you look at the Tosfos and you look at the fifth, sixth line down of the Tosfos, Tosfos Divrei Maskil Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rabbeinu Tam. So this is one suggestion of Tosfos, which, by the way, Rabbeinu Tam himself doesn't love the answer. I know that because if you go on in Tosfos, you'll see that Rabbeinu Tam himself equivocates on the answer. But the answer is interesting, and I'll say it over. V'omer Rabbeinu Tam de lo am Rav Yehuda min b'mina b'cholshu ela b'davar lach dum yedidama par v'dama si'ir d'yalef mina l'kam and d'davar amit ariv hu. So suggestion of Rabbeinu Tam is that Rav Yehuda is only of the opinion that min b'mino is not subject to bittul only when liquids get mixed together. Look, the model, the platform of this whole position is based on the bloods that get mixed together, blood obviously being a liquid. So when liquids get mixed together, so then min b'mino is eino bittul. But if it's solids getting mixed together, so even according to Rav Yehuda, so there would in fact be bittul by min b'mino. That is one suggestion of Rabbeinu Tam. But then, of course, now that you have Rabbeinu Tam's answer, so every time you have a Gemara with Rabbi Yehuda and min b'mino, so then you obviously have to ask yourself, is that talking about a liquid or is that talking about a solid? So if it's talking about a liquid, that's a great support for Rabbeinu Tam's answer. But if it's talking about a solid, so then it's not so good for his answer. So that's, you know, okay. Right. Okay, it could be. That's a reality question, and it could very well be. The Gemara just simply looks at it as one of the same with the rest of the rest of whatever's in the mold. Okay, so that all brings us down to our first answer of the day. That's Rav Papa's answer of the day. Why is there no bittul? So to put it succinctly, it's a davar shebeminyan, something which is counted. According to the Braisa here, it doesn't have to always be counted. As long as it's generally counted, so then it's going to be significant and therefore not going to be subject to bittul. Another answer of the Gemara today, and this is where we're going to be ending up today, with Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi Amar, we are on Ein Gimel Amud Aleph. We're four lines from the bottom of the Amud. Rav Ashi Amar, afilu tem rabbanan. You can even say that the author of our Mishnah is going like the Chachamim, meaning let's leave the world of Davar Shebeminyan. Okay, so now we are up until now, our basic approach has been that animals are sold by count, and because they're sold by count, they're a Davar Chashav. We're going to leave that category, and we're going to move into another category. Afilu tem rabbanan bale chayim chashive velo batle. So the answer that is provided by Rav Ashi is that according to the Chachamim, we're talking about livestock, we're talking about live animals. They are significant and therefore they're not going to be subject to bittul. And so basically now it is a new category, and the category is certain things by definition are significant. Animals, specifically livestock. So they are significant, and because of their significance, they're not going to be subject to bittul. Not because they're sold by count, it's not because of how commercially they are treated, but rather simply because of what they are. They are living entities, and as living entities, this is not the same answer as birya. But rather, as living entities, they're simply, it's almost like a subcategory of a davar chashav. It is significant just simply because they are live creatures, and as such, they are not going to be subject to bittul. Okay. So the Gemara says like this, okay, but why don't we do the following? Why don't we just simply pull one of the animals away from the herd and say the following? You know, we have a rule of called the parish meruba kaparish. So the Gemara says, and we know the rules like this, is that when I have a mixture, and I know what I don't know what each one of the mixture is, but I know the mixture is a composite of mostly heter, some iser. And then something moves away from the mixture. So now, right now, the way we're describing it is I'm actually pulling it away from the mixture.
Is this the form of chazak, right?
Just wait 1 second. Let me just finish, and then we'll discuss. So so I'm pulling it away from the mixture. So under those circumstances, so what the Gemara now is entertaining is that the rule is called the parish meruba parish. Well, since it moved away from the mixture, so now statistically, which one came off the mixture? Probably. And we're dealing with probabilities right now, so probably the one that is mutter, statistically speaking. And so, can't we employ the rule of kol deparish merubah kaparish? So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, nimshach, I pulled one away, havale kavua. The Gemara says, that doesn't help us. In other words, I pulled it away from what was stationary, meaning all the animals were there in a mixture, and they were, for the most part, stationary. V'chol kavua, we're now in the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, v'chol kavua demekamechza amechzadami. And we know that when we have a stationary mixture, so we have the following rule of kol kavua kemechza mechzadami. That when stationary items are in one area, so then in terms of statistics, we look at it at 50-50. Now perhaps you remember the Gemara that we've done numerous times throughout Shas, and the Gemara over there discusses the following scenario. Let's say there are 10 stores that are on this particular street, and of those 10 stores, 9 are selling kosher and 1 is selling non-kosher. And I go into one of the stores in order to buy, but I forgot which one I went into. I simply don't know. And so I now I'm holding a piece of my meat in my hands, and which store did I go into? Now, I understand, by the way, that you can make an argument of habit and which stores do I normally go to, which stores do I not normally go to. But if I could just take that off the table for now and just simply ask the question, well, which store did I go into? So probability tells me that I went into a kosher store. In other words, 9 of them are kosher, 1 of them is not kosher. But the halacha is like this, that because all the stores are obviously stationary, meaning that's the nature of a store, it's real estate, it's property, all the stores are stationary. So the rule is kol kavua, that when I'm dealing with questions of things that are stationary, so then the result is always going to be 50-50, meaning it's a suffix. Now, do I have a rational way to explain it? You've probably heard me say this in the past. No. I have no rational way to explain this. Meaning, why should it be that we ignore the probability and we ignore the statistics and we just simply call it now 50-50? I don't have a rational way to explain it, but the good news is, at least for me, is that many, many before me also try to explain it rationally. I have not successfully done so. But it's a rule that the Gemara uses all the time. What's the basis of this rule? We're not going to be discussing it now. It does come from another. It's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but it's darshan out from based on a series of psukim in the Torah. Not for now. The rule is kol kavu kemechza mechzadame. When I have animals that are basically in one pen, and for the most part, let's see, they can even be taking a step one or two in various directions, but they're considered kavua. And so therefore, when I'm pulling an animal away from the mixture, so then we are in the rule of kol kavua kemechza mechzadame. And therefore, it's not subject to bittul because the rule is kemechsa amechsa. We treat it like 50-50, meaning it's a bona fide suffix. So the Gemara says, Ella. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, you know what? You're right. Of course you're right. Meaning, once you know the rule, so then you're right. But Ella, nich b'shinu, denaydi. V'neima kol deparish meruba parish. So the Gemara says, okay, but right now the animals are stationary. What if we get all the animals to move? Okay, so in other words, go right into the center of, I don't recommend this, but go right into the center of the herd and start hitting animals. And the animals now are going to be scattering in all different directions. And so now we have movement. And it's really interesting where you could take a scenario of kavua and actually remove the kavua environment. Now, obviously with stores, you cannot do that. Stores are inanimate objects. That's real estate, right? Firmly attached to the ground. So with stores, you cannot remove the kavua environment. But with animals, you have that ability. So as long as you get all the animals up in a ruckus and moving around, so you could remove the kavua aspect of it. And if that doesn't, right now, just follow. Right? Elanich b'shino. So the Gemara is suggesting now hit them. Then Naidi, where they're all going to be now movement. V'neima called the parish, move by parish. Now, you have removed the kavua environment. You have now made it a non-kavua environment. And now when you take one animal away, so vis-a-vis that one animal, so now it is called the parish meruba kaparish. So when one is taken away, I ask the question, well, where did it come from? It came from a composite of most of them being mutter, one of them being usser. Now it's not kavua because they were all in motion, and therefore I can legitimately say the one that I took is of heter. And why don't we say that? Why is that not suggested in our Mishnah? Amar Rava, so to that the Gemara gives an answer. Rava says, Gzera. Well, it's the rabbinic decree. Now, it will take the Gemara a couple of tries to, in order to figure out how the rabbinic decree works, but the Gemara right now is saying that it, because of rabbinic decree, meaning in principle it could work, but because of rabbinic decree, so the Chachamim said don't do it. Now, what exactly is the rabbinic decree? So, as I pointed out, the Gemara is going to try a couple of times. So we're going to skip the parentheses. Gzereshem yavo yud kohan mevasachas vayikrivo. Well, what may end up happening is that, let's say, 10 kohanim try this out, meaning they have all the animals go into motion, removing the kavua environment, and now each one of them taking but one animal. So now the one that they took probability-wise is going to be a mutter animal, but then could be, now again, I know this is unlikely, but just if you can follow me. But it could be then that what they're going to be doing is they're going to be offering it all at the same time. Each one of them are going to be offering at the same time. Now, at the exact same time, so you and I know that this is a question that the Gemara asks often of whether or not F. Shalit Samson or E. F. Shalit Samson. Can things be done at the exact same time, yes or no? The Gemara has a debate on that issue. For our purposes right now, let's entertain the idea that, yes, it could be brought out at the same time. Again, it's unlikely, but it's possible. So, Amar Lehu, Merabban LaRava, Ala Me'ata, Megisa, Isura, Mishum, Megisa, I'm sorry, Megisa, Asira. So, is it really unlikely? Meaning, if you take a look at Rashi, Klomer. V'chimi achar shemashchiv lachu echad echad levado. Remember, each one of the kohanim took one animal individually. And they did so while the animals were in motion. Because each one now is taken from the roof. And Rashi goes on to say, V'shachtan v'kibol damam b'megis, b'chazaka shu kosher, chozen u'mitzarfim hashchutim liyos rovu liyasar. Is this really likely? Is it really going to be at all likely that they're all going to be literally stirred in the bowl and going to be sprinkled at the same time? So the Gemara says, Mishum shem yavo yud kohan mevasacha v'yikru basar kohan mevasachas. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what's happening is that 10 kohanim are going to be coming and taking an animal, and each one of the kohanim are going to be taking an animal simultaneously. So once again, the Gemara says, Miyafshar. And the Gemara says, again, that's really unlikely. Elam Rava. So the Rava then says, okay, you're right. That's not the rabbinic concern. Elam Mishum Kavua. So the Gemara says that the rabbinic concern is the rabbinic concern of Kavua. Put simply, put succinctly, meaning you're right. In principle, this would work. If the animals were struck and the animals all started moving around, so then we remove the kavua environment, and now as each one of the kohanim take one animal, so to the question of are they taking a mutter animal or usser animal, they're taking a mutter animal, called the parish meruba kaparish. The problem is that the next time this happens, right? If we get to that, but the next time that happens, so now the kohanim are not going to be halachically sensitive to the fact that getting them to run around is the key to how this works. Because if the animals are not running around, so then we are in an environment of kavua, and kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. So what Rava says is that the rabbinic concern is that people are not going to be sensitive to the idea of kavua. And so that's the problem, that's the consideration. And now the Gemara brings us to our next step. Amar Rava, hashad amar Rabbanan, lo nakriv, inakriv lo meratzeh. And Rava now makes the following statement. Now, because even though in principle, when a Kohen, after having all the animals go into motion, the Kohen takes one of the animals, and really that animal now is an animal shel heter, based on the principle of kol, deparish, meruba, kaparish. Because of the rabbinic concern and consideration, and we'll go even one step further, because of the rabbinic ban of doing so, so that means to say that rabbinically, this animal is censored. And because of such, so that now we're going to have a supplemental question, and that is, that because of the rabbinic censor, so this animal now is nidche. It's going to be pushed off. And as a result of that, this animal cannot be offered as a carbon. I'll say it even better. The animal can never be offered as a carbon. The El Amareva Mishim Kavua, I'm sorry, Amareva Hashad Amar, I'm just reading the line again in the Gemara. Amareva Hashad Amar Rabban Lo Nakriv, Inakriv Lo Meratze. And because it is now Nidche, it's pushed off, so even if post facto the animal is going to be offered as a carbon, it's not going to provide atonement. Eitzvei Ravuna Bar Yehuda L'Rava Chatos Shinesarva Ba'ola Ba'ola Shinesarva Ba'chatos. Rashi points out over here that this brisa that we're quoting right now is about birds. Right? Birds getting mixed together. Now, this was the previous parak, and the parak before that, the sixth and seventh parakim of Zvachim dealt with birds that got mixed up one with another. If I have a chatos that gets mixed up with an ola, or ola that gets mixed up with chatos, meaning birds, afilo achas beribu, yamusu. And even if it's one within 10,000, so the birds are to die, meaning, as we've learned in the previous parak, once birds get mixed up, I cannot offer the bird above, the bird that should have been applied above the chutah sirkah to the one below the chutah sirkah. And if you remember, we spent a lot of time learning about the sheet of Rabbi Yoshua, that the ola can actually be converted to a chatas. Okay, but anyway. Kulan, I'm sorry, beribo yamusu kulan. Ba'medvar mamorim b'koin nimlach. That's if the coin asks questions. However, ava, b'koin she'in nimlach, but if the coin did not ask the question, but also lamala mechza kasho mechza pasol. If, let's say, he offered the birds above, so then half of them are going to be kosher and half of them are going to be pasul. Lamata mechza kosher mechza pasul. Half of them are going to be kosher, half of them are going to be pasul. Achas lamata v'achas lamalan, shneim psulin. She'ani omer chatas kreva lamala v'ola kreva lamata. If one bird is done above or one bird is done below, and I don't know which one was the chatas, which one's the ola, so then we can make a very strong argument, meaning it's 50-50, we can make, so that's a strong argument in halacha, so we can make the argument that the ola bird which should have gone above went in fact below. The chatos bird that should have been done below went above. Ela ha-kam, I'm sorry. And what did we just learn together in this brisa? Well, I'll say this tongue in cheek. What we learned in this brisa is sometimes it's better to first shoot and then ask questions. Okay, but I say that with sarcasm. What we learned in this brisa is that even though rabbinically the bird should be put to death. Meaning if the Kohen would have asked a question to the Sanhedrin, the Kohen, and what do I do with these birds? So what would have been told to him is the bird should die, which means basically that the birds are censored. And meanwhile, then if he's to take the birds and then bring them to the Mizbeach, some of the birds are going to be accepted. Isn't that going against Rava? Ela ha-kamandam or balechaim nidachim, ha-kamandam or balechaim einan nidachin. To which the Gemara says, okay, but Rava's not bothered by that because the author of that brisa that we just learned together, and by the way, when I say that brisa, I really mean a Mishnah, meaning what we just learned together is another Mishnah in Kinim. In the last week, we've learned, I don't want to say the majority, but we learned a lot of the Mishnahs in Kinim. There are only three prakim of Kinim. So that was the Mishnah in Kinim. That was actually what we just learned together is the second mishnah of the first parak, and the first mishnah of the third parak. But anyway, that mishnah in Kinim is of the opinion that live animals, and that in this case birds, are not going to be rejected. Rava was subscribing to the viewpoint that we learned earlier was also credited to Rav Yochanan that live animals are in fact subject to dichui. So the Gemara says harishchutan delkulam nidachem v'tzanan. The Gemara says, what about animals which are shechted, which according to everybody is subject to dichui, and meanwhile, v'tanan, with the Gemara quotes another Mishnah, where on the very top of Ayin Dalamid Aleph, Rabbi Lazar Amarim Karav Arosh Al-Acha Mehem, Yikruvu Kol Aroshim. If the head of one of them is offered, so then you should bring the heads of all of them. Meaning, if a question was asked first, so then for sure none of them would have been brought up, but if he went ahead and brought up one the heads of one of them, so he should bring the heads up of all of them. So we're obviously talking about animals that are shechted, because we're talking about just simply the presentation of the head. And so why don't we say dichui over there? So again, Rava deflects, and Rava says, "Who damer kechana na mitzri? Detanya chana na mitzri. Omer afilo dam bekos mevi chaveru mezavik lo. If let's say I spilled the blood, the Kohen Gadol should say better. Were to spill the blood of one of the two, so that means to say, what do you do now? Where I have the goat blood that got spilled, unrecoverable, and now what do I do? So do you have to get a new pair of goats in order so that you go through the procedure of lottery again?" So Chanan HaMitzri is of the opinion, no, that you just simply need to get one and that would be sufficient. Why? Because even according to Chanan HaMitzri, even after shechting, it's not subject to dichui, it's not subject to permanent rejection. So the Gemara, so Rava says that b'raisa could be going like Chanan HaMitzri, but again, I'm of the opinion of rejection, and therefore, once the rabbi censored such a karban, it therefore is subject to dichui, and therefore cannot be offered as a karban. So, to summarize today, to the question of why is there no bittul in our Mishnah when the animals get mixed up together? So the first line of thought today offered by Rav Papa is that animals are generally sold by count. It's a davar shebeminyan. A davar shebeminyan is not subject to bittul. The machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, whether it always has to be sold by count, whether sometimes it's sold by count. So Rav Papa has a brisa that covered most of Ayin Gimel Mod Aleph that clearly subscribes to the idea that even if it's generally sold by count, that is enough to be considered a davar chashuv and therefore not going to be subject to bittul. That's one approach. A second approach is that of Rav Ashi. We're talking about live animals. Live animals are not subject to bittul. Live animals are put under the category of a davar chashuv and therefore not going to be subject to bittul.